Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Trey's in here looking like Get Smart. Remember Get Smart with the smartwatch? Well, they didn't call it a smartwatch back then.
No, I don't know what they call it. Oh, we're on. I don't know what they call it, but yeah. I do remember. It still comes on.
Yeah. You don't even talk to Siri. You just say it. Your thing doesn't, you don't even have to say like Siri to prompt it.
No.
You just say, hey.
I just know you hold the button and you just.
Yeah.
What's okay. What's my battery life?
All right, high tech. Yeah.
It's laziness.
Email all my clients and let them know that I'm thinking about them.
Listen.
I mean, that's out there now.
I was going to say. Yeah. That's
AI.
That's out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think AI, I mean, look, I think we are like hastening our own, like the end of our own utility.
Right.
But at the same time, it's helpful. Like, can't lie. Yeah, and it's killing the environment
line?
Too.
Where's the line?
Yeah.
You know? I'm out here saying the same thing and.
Yeah,
this is not a recommendation, but out here buying ETFs that benefit from building data centers,
man.
Cause,
yeah,
it's happening.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it is. It is, and we're killing the earth over it too.
Yeah, I think we did a couple shows around that.
More on Michael Jackson. I'm still thinking about this film. Have you seen it yet?
I still haven't seen it.
All right, I've been replaying it in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other things that I learned about Michael in this movie. For one, Jafar does an amazing job.
That's his nephew. All I've been hearing.
He's amazing.
Unanimous. Like, no one, everyone is saying that.
Like, you, like, the dances, he looks like him, mm-hmm. the voices, like, he really channeled his uncle, and he did an amazing job.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, like, people keep saying, I didn't learn anything new about Michael. Like, that's not true. I learned a couple of things, and this might be just me not knowing about Michael. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows he loves animals. Everyone knows about Bubbles and the whole nine.
The song Ben was about a mouse.
See, I don't even know the song Ben. So maybe I don't love Michael as much as everybody else, but.
It's not a love. It's a knowledge. I'm a trivia.
Most of the animals that he had, he rescued. Like, did you know that Bubbles was being used to test? Like to test products on.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And he rescued him from animal testing.
Mm.
Like, that's something I didn't know. I don't think most people knew that.
I genuinely believe Michael Jackson had a child's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't change.
Yeah.
I have some other thoughts, but.
Yeah. I didn't know how much he spent a lot of time, like. Visiting hospitals, like when he had that burn, like people always make fun of him getting his head burned, but like he donated all the money from his legal settlement to the burn victims at that hospital. And he spent a lot of time visiting kids in hospitals.
Somehow I knew that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
The social media and the internet, I knew that somehow. Yeah.
And we know his childhood was truncated, but like there was a profound statement where he said, like, I can't be like the other kids because they just want to take pictures of me and ask for my autograph. Like, I just want to be, you know, a regular kid.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
I think there's an innocence that kids give. And I think, you know, I'm not defending some of the accusations that were out there, but I truly believe there was an innocence there and that made him comfortable. Do you know what I mean? Listen. I'm no psychiatrist. I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Jackson was on the spectrum.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, look.
A lot of.
These things we'll never know. Like, we'll never know if he was.
Creatives and artists, and I'm not painting everyone with the same brush, but you know, I'm speaking from my own perspective, and I know he's an adult and he wouldn't mind me sharing this. My son is on the spectrum, mm-hmm. yeah, but was diagnosed at 20.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually one of his superpowers because yeah. he has an insane ability to, mm-hmm. he's like musically he's gifted.
Yeah.
And so there's some things he'll totally miss, like he'll mm-hmm. be oblivious to, but there yeah. are things that he hears and sees. You know, when we were in Minneapolis and you treated us to the Prince mm-hmm. Museum tour, think about the things they were saying about Prince,
yeah.
about him having that.
Yeah, he was obsessive and compulsive about colors.
And the thing with color and yeah. like how he would see color when yeah. he played music. Like mm-hmm. that's not neurotypical.
Yeah.
So agreed. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But you have to understand people. And be committed to understanding people mm-hmm. To accept something like that.
Yeah, and I look at the film as a celebration of a great person that, mm-hmm. you know, was complicated. And, like, there's a lot of allegations, new allegations of things that he did. And, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, we literally will never know.
Yeah.
And God bless him, his spirit, and, like, anybody that was hurt by him. If somebody was, you know, felt mm-hmm. hurt by him in any way, God bless them, too, that they will have healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The music is incredible, though.
Oh, great music.
Yeah.
Great music. So let's get into the show. So what's interesting about adulting is that we are often presented with a lot of really big decisions to make, but they're in conflict with one another.
Mm.
And like no one's ever really told us how to prioritize, how to sort out which ones to do now versus later.
Mm-hmm.
And so today we're going to walk through what we call money math. For some of this, it really feels like common sense, but like my mama always said, like common sense ain't common.
That's right.
And I think that most people don't know this stuff because the stats prove that they don't know it. And we're going to get through some of right. these stats. We're talking about money math. And also we're introducing this concept of co-holding.
Mm-hmm.
And the co-holding paradox, and we're going to break down what that means. But today, the goal is for you to listen and to walk away with some rules of thumb for how you can make better money decisions on a day-to-day basis.
Is co-holding a term, or is it a boomerism?
No, it's a legit term with a bunch of research.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I found Harvard Business Review like papers on this. Like,
so it just proves how smart you are. You could go either way.
Because
could have been something you came up with, or it could be
I would have called
theory
it,
that's existing. You'd have called it something else.
I would have called it Fool's Paradise or something like that.
You would have put some
something pop culture-ish on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like the things that we're going to help people to understand how to navigate is like paying off debt versus investing versus saving. Like, how do you know which things to pay off? How do you know, like, if you got a raise, like, where should that extra dollar go? Because a lot of us, again, are out here figuring it out on our own, and we're figuring it out wrong. So let's get into it. We always start with stats. The first stat, not surprising. More than 3 in 4 American households carry debt of some sort. And this counts the big four. That's mortgages, student loans, credit cards, auto loans. Like 3/4 of us carry debt. That debt adds up to $19 trillion.
How many of us have all of the big four?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's word.
I didn't say nothing.
Debt. How many of us have them? Yeah, it's a lot. High debt burdens are also associated with higher levels of stress, like mm-hmm. financial stress, like relationship stress. And lower debt makes us feel better, for real. Like,
of course.
So we got to get into this. So now here's where we get into that paradox. So there was a study by Vanguard that said, and to be a Vanguard client, you've got investments, right? Now,
yes.
For a lot of these people, their investment is their IRA account.
Yeah.
Maybe it's their 401k. Maybe it's RSUs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Restricted stock units.
Yeah.
But 35% of Vanguard clients who have investments by default of them being clients are also carrying revolving credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
So a third, a little more than a third.
Yep.
And if we look at only the folks that have brokerage accounts, these are folks that have an account that is not tied up like an IRA that you can't touch until you're 59 and a half years old. Like, this is money that is basically a checking account
mm-hmm.
that you can buy stocks with. 26% of Vanguard brokerage account holders mm-hmm. also have credit cards.
Interesting.
And then even further, of the ones that have a brokerage account and credit cards, which again, over one in four of them, over 25% of them, like two-thirds of them also have cash sitting in their mm-hmm. brokerage account.
Right.
And the amount of cash they have on average is about $19,000, and the average amount of debt they have is $3,200. That's the co-holding.
That's
co-holding is like I'm holding.
So easy of a word problem to solve for me.
Like, yeah, I'm holding cash in mm-hmm. my left hand, and in my right hand, I owe somebody some money.
Mm-hmm.
The cash
with interest.
The cash in my left hand, I'm earning maybe a 3% rate on.
Word.
The debt in my right hand, I'm paying out 25% on.
Doesn't make sense.
It's a fool's paradise mm-hmm. a little bit. Yeah, so that's the idea of co-holding, and we're gonna spend a lot of time on why people do this. But again, money math, like mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense.
Correct.
We were talking a couple weeks ago about the older woman. We did the grandma show.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma's money is funny. And this idea that like, yo, I've got credit card debt and I got cash in the bank. And like, it makes sense to us because of our mental accounting. But mm-hmm. we'll walk through why that ain't right as well. Other debt things. So your debt changes as you age. So like, as you first get into adulthood, your biggest debts are student loans and auto.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, it becomes mortgages. But then over time, what's supposed to happen is your debt decreases over time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will tell you, as a financial advisor, someone who sees the balance sheets of a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't always work like that.
Correct.
Like your debt is supposed to peak in your early 40s mm-hmm. and then decline. Like on average, a person who's 80 years old, there's only like 20% of them are in debt and 80% are debt free in their 80s. But like we've seen some folks in debt in their 80s for sure. Other things, these are just trends. This is what the data is telling us, or the data are telling us. I hate saying that. I always try to reformat the sentence so say it that way.
It's like texted, past tense of text. It sounds wrong.
Yeah, I don't even think that's a word.
Texted.
Yeah, like it is a word, but
right.
it
right, but feels it like sounds it like be. It's. It feels like
it's like
shouldn't
we made
be.
That up.
So
it wasn't a
I
word.
Will change the sentence or phrase around to say I sent a text.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't like how it sounds.
It sounds weird.
Texted. Texted sounds like I'm ignorant.
Yeah.
Grammatically.
Yeah.
It sounds like it should not have. It sounds like a word that we add ed to that we're not supposed to.
Or even like some people say. You ever hear people say, "Texts," like there are multiple texts.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because all this stuff is kind of new. Like, there were no text messages
right.
when you and I were in high school.
Right.
So
it's
now.
It's also the just how things roll off our tongues, right? Like, it's like the person or people who say X instead of ask. It's just.
But, like, text was a noun for most of our life.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
And now it's a verb.
And now it's a verb.
Yeah.
Well, it's both.
Mm-hmm. Other things that should cause your debt to go down is the more money you make.
Mm.
Like your debt should go down. But what often happens is you end up in more debt.
Lifestyle creep.
Because of mortgage balances. What's interesting is for folks who make over 200K, 70% have mortgages. Like that's, of course, it makes sense, you know. But, you know, again, the stats show that those debts grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we're not really trending down the way we should as we get older. So let's get into some of these money mistakes that get made because we don't understand the money math. Okay. The first, and this is from a study, like this is not just Andrea and Alan speculating. Like this was Vanguard did a really detailed study on this. So the first.
But it's also confirmed by what we see.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
First mistake that people make is that they pay off their debts too slowly. And in particular, it's the high interest debt.
Mm-hmm.
It's the credit card debt. And mm-hmm. we've already given you that idea that if you've got cash in the bank or in your brokerage account and you've got a credit card balance, you out here co-holding,
mm-hmm.
like you should pay those credit card balances off.
Yeah. Because it's not likely in the near term that you're going to earn on your investments what you're paying.
Oh, for sure.
Interest.
Yeah, not likely that it's guaranteed too, because that's a guaranteed return investment for sure. The next money mistake is people paying off the wrong debt. Like they're like focusing on being debt free, and they'll do stuff like focus on paying off the mortgage quickly, but the auto loan and the credit card is chilling right there with higher rates.
Yep.
But they're worried about getting debt free and getting that mortgage off their back.
Right.
And I guess their mindset is that, look, the car loan will pay itself off in a couple of years.
Right.
Right. And so
if I just keep doing what I'm doing, I know there's an end to it.
Yeah.
And I know when that end is.
Yeah. Credit card is not so much, though. You could be in credit card debt for as long as you're in a mortgage.
Oh, for sure. I love the rules that came out where at least they're required, the lenders are required to show you this is your balance. If you pay the minimum payment, it's going to take you 157 years to pay this off. Yeah. If you pay it off in 3 years, this is how much you'll pay. If you pay it off in five, like I think that was a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much people are paying attention to it. I mean, most of us are getting our statements electronically anyway, so I don't know if they're scrolling down to see it or just looking at what's due, but
yeah,
I do like that there was at least an effort to be more transparent.
And on that note of paying off the wrong debt, according to the study, 70% of people who prepay a debt and they have both a mortgage and a car loan, 70% of them will focus on prepaying the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Even though most of the time your mortgage rate is going to be lower than your car loan rate.
Yeah.
Another mistake that the Vanguard study uncovered. There's a lot of us who have an employer match on our 401k plans.
Mm-hmm.
But because we're so focused on paying off debt that we've made the priority getting out of debt and then I'll start with my 401k.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mathematically,
a
match, whether it be 50% match or 100% match,
mm-hmm.
that's a rate of return you can't beat. Like, right. That's a great rate of return.
Yep. You put in zero or you put in less, but the match is not.
Yeah.
I'm not expressing it well verbally.
Mentally, we're here mentally.
We understand.
You're saying like if I put up a dollar, I get paid an extra dollar into the account.
Yeah.
I just doubled my money. I got 100% rate of return.
Exactly.
Way better of a rate of return than paying off even the 30% interest rate on mm-hmm. your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you get that extra dollar, at least make sure you match out and then pay off the credit card debt after that.
And it's one of the criticisms, like I know a lot of people who follow like Dave Ramsey. Do not come for me, Dave Ramsey and your people. Do not come for me. But it is one of the criticisms of his teachings, which is you shouldn't invest until you've paid off all your debt.
Yeah.
I think there's some exceptions to that. I think you got to do both.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that makes you a co-holder, I think you have to do something.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that should be the priority over paying off debt, but I'm sorry. Sometimes you got to do two things at the same time.
But here's, I'm going to give you some stats.
Okay.
26% of us
mm-hmm.
are making extra payments on our mortgage while not taking advantage of an employer match.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
35% of us are doubling up on our auto loan payments and not getting a 401k match.
Mm-hmm.
31% of us are skipping the 401k match, but instead aggressively paying down student loans. And student loans is one of those ones. I know we hate them.
I ain't doing that.
But like student loans die when you die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the assets, the wealth that you create, that's legacy. Student loans ain't legacy.
Let it ride.
So we're leaving a lot of money on the table. The average person, again, going back to the 26% of us who are skipping their employer match to make an extra mortgage payment, they're missing out on $1,200 a year. And that's the average. Like, these matches can be way more than that, of course.
I really like this show, sir.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Dre?
Just saying.
Listen, that's high praise from Andrea Gray.
What?
That's high praise. I appreciate that.
Come on now.
Yeah. I love that. And hopefully listeners are enjoying it too.
Yeah, I mean, why are we acting like
I'm
not capable of?
I'm just saying I take that as a compliment.
This is a really good show. I think a lot of people will rethink some things. So we're going to keep it going. We're going to go to break and we'll keep it going. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
So let's get into this co-holding a little more. So we described what it is. According to research, again, not just the Vanguard research, but generally, anywhere between 12 and 50% of people in America co-hold. Again, they have cash and they also have credit cards. And typically they have enough to either pay off or make a meaningful dent in their credit card debt. So why do they do that? And by the way, I got to give these other illustrations of how much co-holding doesn't make sense. So would you give up a $20? Like if you were asking for change and someone was like, can I get change for a 20? And you say, yeah, sure, I'll give you change for a 20. And in exchange, they give you one single dollar bill.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
But that's what you're doing when you're co-holding.
I understand.
Because effectively, you're paying $20 to the credit card company to get a dollar from your bank.
Right.
Like, that's what you're doing.
I love breaking it down like this.
Another way to look at it, if you've got $5,000 in savings and $5,000 in credit card debt, then your bank is basically charging you a convenience fee of 25%. Right? That's the difference between the 3% they're giving you and the 28% you're paying. They're charging you a convenience fee just to keep your cash.
That's right.
In sight. Mm-hmm. Like, would you pay that if a bank said, look, we got a convenience fee of 25% per year?
No.
Yeah. You'd be like, no, I'll go to a different bank.
Real talk, I don't even like paying the annual fee for some of the Amex rewards and perks.
Yeah.
Unless I know, like, the way my billing is set up, that fee gets charged in October. I guess that's when I, what month it was when I first got my Amex. But I'm like, I'm hard pressed in those last 3 months of the year to make sure I take advantage of enough rewards to make the fee make sense.
Yeah, well, otherwise, see, but they got you because now you're spending more money just to save.
Well,
or just to get points or whatever,
like,
it is.
Yeah. And then I'm using it to pay for something. So I don't pay cash for it.
Yeah.
But it's got, it just, the fee has to make sense.
Yeah. I once, so back in the day, and this is in the 90s, and I'm sure the bank doesn't have these same rules, but Bank of America back in the day in Baltimore, they were literally charging a fee.
Tell them which branch. This is like
in Baltimore. I'm like an 18 year old.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I used to get my check cashed. For, and I went where I could get my check cash for free. Like this is, you know, back before people were using debit cards like that.
Sure.
Like we were in a cash. It was a simpler time back then, right? But the Bank of America in Baltimore back then in the 90s, they would charge you a fee for a deposit slip to put money into their bank.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not paying y'all to give me, give you my money.
Criminal.
And what's crazy, I ain't banked with them for decades. Like I happen to, you know, have a little account with them now.
Right.
I don't really use it a whole lot because I'm still tarnished by the fact that they did that back in the day. So I would definitely not pay a 25% convenience fee if the bank charged it explicitly. But I will admit that I've co-holded. I have co-holded.
Co-held?
I have co-held. I have.
Just since we're talking about grammar.
Yes. I was once a co-holder.
You co-helded it.
So
I'm being silly.
So why do people do it? So the reasons why people do it, for one, it's marketing. Like if you think about the marketing, like you're constantly being marketed credit cards and you're constantly being marketed banks.
Man, are your kids getting credit card offers sent to the house?
I don't think so.
Mine aren't. I don't understand it.
They are?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know why.
They must know that their mom got
not,
good credit.
But they're not from their bank.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
they're not from where they bank.
Yeah. Not
so
yet.
I'm like, how? What? How?
They know my kid's broke. So they're not doing that. So financial industry marketing is one reason. Another reason is like people have this big fear of having zero savings. Or said differently, people feel really good about seeing their a comma in their bank account balance. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, a comma in their credit card doesn't bother them at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they see it every day the way you see your cash balance.
Yeah. And I said this to a client once, a potential client. I said, well, you need to pay off your credit card. And I know you're going to look at your emergency fund and be like, it's not what I want it to be. Mm-hmm. Well, the client said, what if I have an emergency? What if I need new tires? I was like, oh, I got an idea. I don't know. Maybe use the credit card. That's why it's there. For emergencies.
Right.
Is the purpose of a credit card.
Sure.
Not so that you can finance your emergency savings.
Right.
Now, there may be some real reasons why people don't want to use a credit card as their emergency fund. Maybe they're worried that their credit's going to go bad one day, or they're going to lose their job and somehow the credit card company's going to find out and cancel the card. Like, I don't know. But again, for a lot of us, we can afford to not co-hold so much. Other reasons. I talked earlier about mental accounting, and this is this idea that in our heads, like we know like what our money, like we have these little different ways of accounting for our money, right? So we might label our savings as being, this is my safety bucket mm-hmm. and my money for the future. And like, I don't want to deplete my future, right? Like that's,
right.
I don't want to deplete my feeling of safety. And we think mentally that debt is the past, like that's past purchases. Like I don't want to trade my future from my past, but
right.
basically you're doing it anyway.
Yes. Yep.
Because you are, you know, I always make this analogy, like if your goal is to build wealth, you can't, it'd be like trying to heat your house with all your windows open in the winter. Like eventually, I guess it might get a little warmer, but it's very, very inefficient.
Yes. I just think we're not looking at things that way. We're not putting it down on paper. We're not looking at debt balances the same way we look at cash balances. We literally don't see it.
Yeah. Other ways that we do mental accounting. Do you ever do this? Do you ever say that, well, this is the money I got from that, so I need to keep that over here. Like this is the money I got, let's say from graduation gifts, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna keep that there. Or this is the money I got from a bonus, so that needs to go over there. Or this is the money I got from wherever. You know,
yeah. I don't know if I'm following, but keep going.
No, it's like, okay, there are people, maybe not you, mm-hmm. that account for their bank account balances. They might have three different savings accounts. You've seen this. Like you mm-hmm. have one client mm-hmm. with like 20 different accounts.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, oh, I got this from this source, so I need to put it in this account.
Sure.
Or another would be like what I plan to use it for. Like the people that have the vacation fund separate from the Christmas fund.
Yep.
And mentally, it's accounted for differently.
Sure. I this might be an example of what you're saying. I have a client that didn't have debt though, but had a lot of cash, but it wasn't money that she earned. So it was almost like she didn't want to spend it because it wasn't earned income.
Where'd the money come from?
Some money was inherited from her mother.
Mm-hmm.
That's emotional. I get that. Some money, I think, came to her in a divorce settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it wasn't a contentious divorce. So I don't know. But
that's a good point. What's the source of the money?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, so we just gonna sit here and buy CDs? Like,
yeah.
No. And this was in a super low interest rate environment.
Yeah.
So anyway, mm-hmm. it's more behavioral finance.
Yeah, the only time I think co-holding really makes sense, okay, maybe you got a legit 0% APR offer that you've already accepted. Sometimes there's small print things.
Sure.
You know, where you get charged a fee for the transfer.
For the transfer,
right? But maybe you're in a 0% window. Maybe Again, you're worried about access to credit for some other reason.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, mathematically, again, today's show is about money math.
Right.
Like the thing I like about, like I'm not a big math person, but mm-hmm. like the thing that is undeniable about math is like it is black and white.
It is. It like, is black and white.
It is what it is.
Yes. The numbers. You know what my dad used to say?
What's that? God bless his soul, by the way.
Liars may figure, but figures don't lie.
Yeah, that's a word. That's a word. That is a word. So what are ways that you can evaluate debt? So rate is one way to look at it. The interest rate, we've talked a lot about that. Another is the structure. The other day, a family member, I was going to tell you who it was, but a family member hit me up like, I'm about to take out a home equity line of credit to pay off both of our cars and my wife's credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, bruh, like, you want to pay for that car for 30 years?
Right.
Right, like we got to think about, yeah, the interest rate is one thing, but the length of that debt,
yes,
that's something to think about.
Right, so unless you have a plan to pay that debt off earlier than the loan terms,
mm-hmm.
and you actually do it,
yeah,
that also doesn't make mathematical sense.
Yep, next thing to think about with debt is, you know, is it secured or unsecured?
Mm-hmm.
Right. If it's secured, the rates are lower, but you often can lose something, right? Like you can mm-hmm. lose your car, which is secured.
Mm-hmm.
You can lose your house, which is secured. And like, do you want to risk the place where you live over something, paying off something, you know?
Right.
Like a student loan, for example, mm-hmm. that is unsecured and nobody can take anything from you.
Right.
Except for your credit. They can ruin your credit.
I mean, like, Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, there's other math involved too. Like, well, what's the interest rate on that student loan? Some of the private loan rates are not so great.
Yeah. And then finally, thinking about debt, like it's the use. Like, what is this loan supposed to be for?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Like, I have a client right now who is thinking about buying a house.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I said, yes, you should get a mortgage, but also you can consider a line of credit from your investment account.
Mm-hmm.
But I said the proper loan is the mortgage, right? Because like you're going to have that house for a long time. It's mm-hmm. a 30-year mortgage that matches a 30-year asset. Like mm-hmm. the life of the asset
yes.
and the type of loan should kind of go hand in hand.
Yes.
That's why credit cards make less and less sense. Like I'm buying a sweater that I may not be able to fit in a couple years. It'll be out of season in a couple
Speak
months.
For yourself.
Like, do I need That's to be kidding. Paying for that for the next 10 years?
Right. That yeah. does not make sense.
So I'm going to switch gears. Dre, I want to give you a little money math quiz. I know you haven't looked at this yet, so this is going to be
Here
fun.
Here we go.
Don't look at the computer.
Here we go.
We're going to put Dre on the spot.
That's and fine.
I bet
eating.
You.
I'm going
to
keep eating.
I bet you you're going to get most of the answers right.
Okay.
And I will admit to you that I took this quiz and I did not get every answer right, even though I claim to have money math common sense.
Okay.
Okay. First question, contestant Dre.
Fine.
Maybe we should go to break and then we'll come back and we'll do the quiz.
I'm not looking at these questions.
Let's
Are
do
they
that.
In our notes?
They're in the notes
you know,
with the answers.
You know but how I know, much I read the I notes know you in advance.
So yeah. Let's go to break. We'll come back. You eat your lunch. You come back and we're going to get into this money quiz. And then we'll end with the rules of thumb. We have 5 rules of thumb for how you can be better about making money decisions from a day-to-day basis.
I'm quiz taker Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer, quiz giver.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Momentum.
We're back.
Mm-hmm.
Andre, are you ready? Did you get the nourishment you need to get through the money quiz?
I'm good enough so that my stomach doesn't growl on the mic.
Okay. All right.
I don't think.
Your name is Pam. We'll start there.
Okay.
Pam has a 401k plan that matches dollar for dollar her first 3% that she contributes. Second, we got 10K credit card balance at 32% annually. Next, we have a $5,000 car loan at 12% annually. And then finally, we've got a student loan, $50,000 in student loans at 7% annually. So A, you prepay the credit card balance. B, you prepay the car loan. C, you prepay the student loan. Or D, you save enough in the 401k to get the match.
So it's between the match and the paying the credit card.
Okay. Mathematically, which one would you
pick? So mathematically, we already talked about the match is 100% return.
Okay. So which one do you pick?
So we'll go with that.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You got the first one correct. Mm-hmm. Good job. Good job. Good job. Okay. All right. So now contestant Pam. Pam is kind of like a black name. What do you think?
I don't know any white Pams.
What's Pam Anderson?
It's Pamela. But does everyone name Pamela? Do the majority of Pamelas go by Pam?
I don't know. Pam Grier, that's who I think of when I think of Pam.
Yeah, I don't personally know anyone
by the way.
Whose name is Pam that's not black.
Yeah.
Pam personally.
Pam from Martin.
She of course. That's usually the first person I think of.
Yeah.
I know the first Pam you think of is Pam Grier because you just said.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So Pam has now matched out. She's put the 3% into her 401k.
Mm-hmm.
She's gotten the match. What's her next best money move? So I'll go back to the choices again.
I think it's the credit card debt. It may not be the highest return.
Yeah, but... no, that's right. Mm-hmm. The credit card balance has a 32% rate. Mm-hmm. So that correct. You got the second one right. I didn't even get a chance to go through the options, but mm-hmm. adding more to the 401k was the first option.
Yeah.
The second was the car loan at 12%. The third was the credit card at 32%. And then finally, it was the student loan at 7%. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next question. This is a tricky one.
Okay.
Okay. So now it's like a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
You still have...
still rocking with Pam?
You're still Pam. But okay. Now, you know, you're a couple years down the road. You're mm-hmm. a wiser Pam. You've made some good money moves so far, Pam. I must admit this.
However.
Before you had 10,000 in credit cards, you still, you racked up some more. You're back at 10,000 again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take out a 401k loan at a rate of 8%. And you're thinking about taking out 10K to pay off the credit cards. Just off money math. Should you do it?
No.
Okay. Why not?
So the rate on the credit cards is what, 30%?
32.
Because not only are you losing, so when you pay yourself back this of the 401k loan, you're paying yourself back at 8%. And that's usually people's rationale. Mm-hmm. I'm borrowing money from myself.
Yeah.
And so I don't owe anybody because I'm paying myself back.
Mm-hmm.
But you lose out on the compounding for the amount that you withdrew.
Mm-hmm.
Loans are not income, right? Loans from 401k are not income.
Unless you leave the job.
Unless you leave the job, in mm-hmm. which case you got to pay it back in full. What was the question again?
Yeah, should you take 10K out of your 401k via loan to pay off your credit cards?
I don't like it.
Yeah. Mm-mm. So I had the same answer. I'm like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
For all the reasons you just named,
mm-hmm.
the money math answer would
says
be
you,
yes.
You says you should.
But again, us as financial advisors, right. like we know that like it's a slippery slope because we've also seen the person take out the 401k loan and then they lose their job or quit their job. And then suddenly they have only 30 days, maybe 90 mm-hmm. to put the money back. And you know, you ain't got it. And now you get a distribution.
10% penalty. All the things.
We also know that you often will forego making new contributions. Not only did you, you lost the compounding on the money you took out, but you also forego new contributions.
Especially if you don't resume work quickly in the scenario where
yeah. So I gladly got this one wrong as well.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't like making that call.
Yeah.
But like mathematically,
mathematically speaking, it makes sense.
You're trading a 32 for an 8. I'd rather pay 8 than 32.
Sure.
Yes.
Listen, I've been in a situation where that math applied and made sense, but I also timed it. And I didn't know if I could because I didn't know if I could control it. The timing was such that in the year of that I did that, I actually contributed. I didn't lose my job.
Mm-hmm.
I actually contributed more
mm-hmm.
to bring my income down. I found other places to put money.
Yeah.
But I was had peace of mind that that debt wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But again, that came with a lot of planning and discipline.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when we make these decisions, we haven't identified how we got there in the first place. Yeah. So whatever caused us to pay off credit card debt and then find ourselves there again.
Yeah. The problem is still there.
We didn't solve the problem, mm-hmm. right? So it's kind of like, are we going to do this again?
Yeah.
If we haven't solved the problem, like you got to have.
That's a big one.
You have to have a plan and you have to adhere to it.
That's exactly what I said to my family member who wanted to get a home equity loan to pay off credit cards. I'm like, look, mm-hmm. I would only do it if you're also going to cut the cards up and not use them anymore.
Yeah. Yep.
Otherwise, you'll get a home equity loan and then you'll be right back in credit card debt.
Exactly.
And now you're.
And have.
Yeah.
Still have the home equity loan.
Yeah. And like you're risking your house now over that.
Yeah.
All right. So next question, Pam, you're doing well so far. I still, even though you didn't get the last one right, I'm down with you. I'm standing like toe to toe or 10 toes down, whatever they say with you on that one. Okay. So you paid off the credit card debt.
What does that really mean?
10 toes down?
It means you're standing firm, right? Firm. You're planted. Mm-hmm. You're not budging.
You're standing on business.
Standing on, oh yeah, that's the other
Another one. She's like, what does that mean?
It's so funny.
Yeah.
I love us, but.
Yeah. We make up some stuff, don't we? Then we got to learn that one.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway. Otherwise, we could be DeLulu or just Lulu.
Oh my gosh.
That's delusional,
please,
y'all.
Don't start.
That's the one cool thing about having kids. They will keep you hip to the new stuff.
For sure.
Yeah.
And they will humble you as well. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you can't say that.
Yeah.
Like, what you talking about? I came up with that. Like, that's not new. That's where we are right now.
Yeah. My son is out there rizzing all the girls, by the way.
Oh, Lord.
You know about Riz?
Riz is actually short for charisma.
Yeah.
But
you
growing up,
them, like,
Riz was, you were peeing.
That was.
No, never. That was never that?
No.
Okay.
That was just piss, I think.
Okay, I'm probably making stuff up now, but it wasn't what it is now.
Dre. Oh my God, you're so crazy.
I'm not crazy.
All right, Dre, you're American when you go in the bathroom.
Riz is also one of the members of New Edition. That's his nickname. I don't remember if it's Ralph or Ricky. No, he goes by Riz.
I know that. Okay. You're American when you go in the bathroom. You're American when you come out. What are you when you're in the bathroom?
European.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. So now you have your credit card debt paid off. And fortunately or unfortunately, you inherited some money and you bought a house.
Okay.
Sorry that somebody died in your life, mm-hmm. Pam. You now have a $500,000 mortgage. It's a 30-year mortgage with a 6% rate. Pam is now 50 years old. And her goal is to pay off the mortgage by the time she retires. Pam gets a raise. Mm. Which of these money decisions is best?
Catch-up contributions. I'm sorry. I'm like trying to.
Yeah.
This is not Jeopardy. I'm trying to answer the question before.
A, you save more than the match into your 401k. Mm-hmm. So assume you already got the match. You add a little extra to mm-hmm. your 401k. B, pay off the car loan at 12%. Somehow you still got that same car loan.
How many years later is this?
I don't know.
That's just a bad loan.
Pam went to a predatory lending place.
Seriously.
For this car loan.
Seriously.
So B was pay off the car loan at 12%. C, pay off the student loan at 7%. Or D, do you pay off the mortgage at 6% more aggressively?
I'm going to need to hear those options again.
Okay. Pam inherited some money. She
Pam
bought
is
a house.
50, so Pam
She's 50 years old.
Doesn't remember.
She has a $500,000 mortgage at 6%. Mm. Which money move makes the most sense? A, invest more money into your 401k. B, pay off the auto loan at 12%. C, pay off the student loan at 7%. Or D, pay off the mortgage at 6%.
I'm inclined to say more money in the 401k.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why.
The potential for tax deferred growth.
Okay.
We're 50. We can put, you know, taxes are a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not getting into the details of pre-tax or after-tax, but you know.
Okay.
Well. We're 50.
Well, Pam.
And a mortgage.
6%.
A 30-year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A 30-year mortgage at $500,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Pam.
Do we still want that at 80?
Yeah. Well, Pam got that one wrong also.
Okay.
Now, the money math.
What did you choose?
I choose the auto loan at 12%.
Okay.
And which is the idea of this.
Well,
like,
yeah.
12.
At this point.
Like, your 401k, and I wasn't thinking about the taxes. I was just thinking mm-hmm. about the rate of growth.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing in my 401k that's going to guarantee me a 12% rate of return.
That makes sense.
Like, I might get...
And we've had this loan for
I might get 8-9% out of my 401k.
Yeah.
But it's not with any guarantees whatsoever.
Sure. That makes sense.
But the auto loan, 12.
That was my...
Yeah.
Nah,
listen, you had some good explanation.
I'm thinking about it out loud.
You had some good ones, and I'm not mad at that. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at that at all. All right, this last one is a trick question. I'll tell you this.
Actually, I would do the, I know I'm not going to get credit for it, but like I would do the car loan. And then now that I no longer have that payment,
mm-hmm.
now I'm putting extra money into the 401k. That just makes sense.
But in your life, have you ever done that? Because I know I never did. I always tried to get the most money into my 401k as I could afford.
Yes.
Even if I had a car loan. And I never had a 12%. Interest rate though.
Never had
my
a
highest
rate
on a car was like 6. It was the highest I ever had.
Yeah, I don't even know if I've paid 6. Yeah. I may have.
Because at 6, it's a different story.
I may have been 4.5 or 5. I've never been at 6. And the worst car loan decision I probably ever had, we financed the car over like 8 years.
Yeah. I will tell you.
With no prepayment penalties. And maybe we paid it off 1 year early, but certainly not the 5 years that I thought we were going to.
Yeah. But I'll tell you this. The rate matters, because if it was
for sure,
like my highest rate was 6, mm-hmm. right? If I have a 6% car loan and my option is to put money into the 401k, I'm probably more inclined to do the 401k now,
mm-hmm.
because I do think, okay, it's not guaranteed, but I think my odds of beating 6% are higher in
course.
A 401k over the long run, depending on how I'm invested.
Rate matters.
Yeah. Okay. So now, final question. No. So far, you got 2 right, 2 wrong.
That's a 50.
I said, I bet you're going to get most of them right.
Okay. So this is it then.
Yeah.
Pressure.
Your mortgage charges 6% interest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you A, prepay the mortgage, B, put more money into the 401k, or D, it depends based on your risk tolerance?
We still talking Pam. And she's still 50?
Yeah, this is Pam. She's still 50. Maybe she's 55 now.
Okay.
But she wants to retire, let's say 65, 70, somewhere in there. She's making a little bit extra money. Should she prepay the mortgage at 6,
add
more to the 401k, or does it really just depending on what her risk tolerance is?
Well, I don't like that third answer option, because... Even if she has a low risk tolerance,
let's just say it differently. It depends mm-hmm. on how you're invested. So let's mm-hmm. say Pam was 100% in money market funds in her 401k, or she was 100% in stocks in the 401k. Like, there's a difference in what the outcome is.
Yeah, and I made the assumption, because this is what we do, that if she has a low risk tolerance, then she's going to be in that money market or bonds, or if she has a high risk tolerance, she's going to be in equity. So in my mind, kind of like we were talking about before,
mm-hmm.
I like the odds of beating 6%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a 401k. But
depends on how you're invested too, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I'm making an assumption of how you're invested based on your risk tolerance, since that was in
so
the
it
question.
Sounds like your answer is C.
Yes.
Ding 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 ding. Yeah. It is the 401k, but it depends on how you're invested. Now, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't really know how they're invested.
Correct.
A lot of people are just picking a random target day fund, or they're not picking anything, and it might default them to something that's not
stable value.
Good.
If I see one more 40 or 50 year old with all their money in a stable value fund.
Yeah. So you did good. Like I predicted, you got more than half of them right.
Okay.
You and I got the exact same score, but different questions wrong.
Fine.
Good job. You're always a good sport with this. So let's close out with our 5 rules of thumb. The first one is that money is fungible. And when I say fungible, it means that whether I have $100 in the bank or $100 in credit cards, it's still $100. They're interchangeable, they're of equal value, and they're really indistinguishable from one another, those dollars themselves. What's different about them is the rates and the returns and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But the money itself is fungible. These two people have the same net worth. The person that has $100 in the bank and $0 in credit card debt, or the person that has $200 in the bank and $100 of credit card debt. Same exact net worth, but one of them is doing better than the other.
Yeah.
The person with no credit card debt is doing better. We have to think about, on that note, we have to think about paying down debt as just a form of savings. Like, it's just another thing you can do to store your money effectively. So that's rule number one, money is fungible. Rule number two, there is such a thing as good debt and bad debt. And I know there's a lot of folks that disagree, that think all debt is bad, but like certain debts have low interest rates, certain debts have tax, you know, favorable tax treatments, tax subsidies, you can call them, right? So good debt we would describe as having a low interest rate, having some tax advantages, and also as something that can be used to either buy an appreciating asset or to level up professionally, right? So
it's an investment.
So good debts, what would you give some examples of what you would say these are good debts?
Some student loan debt can be good.
If you use it to level up in your career.
If you use it to there's no guarantees that that will happen, especially these days and with how expensive college is.
And let's assume you finished the degree.
Let's assume you finished the degree and it's valued.
Yes.
Manifests itself in income.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other good debts.
So real estate, your mortgage, your primary residence. I mean.
Another good debt.
Yeah.
Yep. Low rate. Some tax advantages on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's how long would it take you to save up to pay cash for a home?
Word. And that home's probably going to appreciate in value.
Correct. Yep.
Bad debt. Bad debt would be debts that have
credit cards.
Yeah, credit cards. It's it's debts. If I could categorize them, it's debts that have a high interest rate, no tax advantages, and they're not used to buy things that appreciate. So like I would put car loans in the bad debt category because like your car is depreciating unless you're buying classic cars, which y'all ain't buying no way. Right? So that's number two, is that there is good debt and there is bad debt. Rule number three is that we got to take full advantage of that employer match. That's 100% return or even a 50% return because some employers match the first 50 cents. That they match 50 cents on the dollar for your first X dollars that you put in.
That's right.
Rule number four is that you compare your debts by looking at the interest rates. And if you want to get out of debt, then you want to prepay the ones with the highest rates first. That's also known as the avalanche method.
Right.
We want to focus on the big stuff first.
That's it.
Big rates, not the big balances, the big rates.
Could you ever, I know this is about math, could you ever see an advantage to the snowball method?
Yeah, like
ever.
Yeah, it's very gratifying. Snowball method means I pay off my smallest balances first and I work my way up to the bigger ones.
For the sake of achievement.
Yeah.
I do think there's a mathematical point, though, where you're like, okay, I've achieved, but now let me pivot and let me focus on what makes the most sense mathematically. Yeah. It's like a combination.
Yeah. No, I'm, you know, this is a math day, and so I generally like the avalanche method, but I can see
it is the mathematically correct
of the snowball to start with. Let me pay off my Best Buy card, then I'll work on my Victoria's Secret card, then I'll work on my
Did you look at my credit history?
Target card. Oh my goodness. And then rule number
that would be very old.
And then rule number five, and this I think is the most important one. You got to understand that yes, there is math, but also how you manage debt and even how, like, think about how Andrea, who is a very smart financial person who's been in the financial industry for a long time, like sometimes she made different decisions, but they were a good fit for her. Yep. Right. So even though there is a set of rules. And when we're giving you math, the fifth rule is that sometimes you got to break the rules.
Yeah.
Because mathematically, it might be the right answer, but at the same time, it might not be the right answer for you or your situation.
Or at that time. Like there's so many other factors, but Since we are talking about math and it's a math show, the rules are framework or guides.
That's it.
Sometimes you break the rules.
I'll give you my dad, for example. He doesn't like debt at any interest rate. Yep. He could have a chance to borrow at 3% to invest in something that's going to return 30%. And he's going to be like, nah, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't want debt.
Yep.
And that's good for him. And he sleeps well at night by that. So just understand that it's personal. And we've given a bunch of different scenarios. And it's not always black and white. But I think mostly it is. Like a lot of times it is.
I think there's some scenarios out there too. I know we need to wrap, but like where you kind of do a little bit of both. Like I'm thinking of the person that accumulates a lot of cash, perhaps more than six months to a year of emergency savings, and then a car needs to be purchased. Mm-hmm. So do you then
pay use cash.
The right? Mm-hmm. Pay cash for the car and deplete your savings or pay cash to the car to maybe you're back down to 3 months emergency savings, but not 12 months. And then, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. But I will say this is where a financial advisor comes in. Like we know the circumstances of our clients. Mm-hmm. We can weigh the pros and cons of a variety of different approaches. Yep. We can run the math for you to tell you which one the math is pushing you towards and ultimately help guide you towards a good decision. That's the beauty of what we do.
Absolutely.
And if you are interested in talking to a financial advisor such as myself or Andrea Gray, we would love to talk to you. Visit our website, momentum-advisors.com. Go to the contact page and you can schedule time with us.
That's it.
We'll wrap with you at no expense.
We'll talk about the mathematical rules and we'll talk about the qualitative things.
And that math is mathing all day.
All the time.
So thank you for making it to the end. We appreciate your attention at this time and we'll see you next week at the next appointed time. That's what they say at church.
That is what they say at church. What is the appointed time?
11 a.m.
Whatever.
For Sunday service.
You know, people are 10 a.m. now.
Wednesday Bible study at 7. All, that's the next
all
appointed
the
time.
All the appointed times.
Prayer meeting.
Yes.
Choir rehearsal. You heard the bulletin.
All the appointed times. Govern yourselves accordingly.
Yes.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered financial, investment, tax, or legal advice. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and are based on information believed to be reliable at the time of the recording, but no representation of warranty is made as to their accuracy or completeness.
This podcast does not provide personalized recommendations. Before making any financial or investment decisions, you should consult with a qualified professional who can assess your individual circumstances. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal.